Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain.
Way to go, Stan. Nice shooting.
Thank you. Down goes the HMS Beagle, and we hope with it Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. We have a lighthearted look at this, don't we? I'm Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski. Welcome you to another fun episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take a lighthearted and serious approach to some of the very important subjects of where we came from and maybe even where we're going. And today we're going to talk about something of where it came from.
Well, yeah, weeds.
Okay. Weeds.
No,
okay, weeds. Yes, there's a few questions I have about where weeds come from.
Vegetables?
Vegetables, yes, yes. Yes, the herbs of the field. That's
the curse of sin.
We have vegetables because of the curse.
What? Women.
Okay.
Now, ladies, mothers, plug your children's ears.
Okay.
If you don't want
them to hear this.
We want to tell something. We want to tell something. You know, the original diet, Stan, in the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Was fruits and nuts and grains.
Uh-huh.
It was only sin that brought about the idea of carrots and broccoli. The vegetables only came about because of sin.
I knew it. There's no question about it. That makes sense to me. My theology is with yours on this, John.
You don't have to eat your peas or your broccoli or your Brussels sprouts.
And herbs of the field.
If your parents are trying to make you eat those vegetables, say they're part of the sin diet, Mom. That works every time.
Okay, yes. And now that you can turn it back up again, we'll talk a little more seriously.
Okay.
Yes.
Unplug your children's ears. They're probably biting on your fingers now anyway.
This is another one of the programs that we are recording in the studio on the day, the 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin's birth. And of course, that's February 12, 2009. But there's a 2 days difference here between Valentine's Day. We've already recorded
love.
A program on Valentine and love, the origin of love. And
sex.
It just makes sense that we would talk about the origin of the other thing.
Evil.
The opposite of love.
Where is the opposite of love? And actually, like, we want to begin today, Stan, with a little bit of riddle that comes out of Greek philosophy.
Yes, and this is still considered to be among the earliest known descriptions of the problem of evil. It is dated to probably about the 4th century BC, and Epicurus, the Greek philosopher, came up with this dilemma.
What is a dilemma?
Dilemma. Here it is. The question of where evil comes from. God, and they believed in God, God either wants to eliminate bad things and cannot, or can but does not want to, or neither wishes to nor can, or both wants to and can. Okay, that sets
there's
it.
There are four possibilities.
Now let's walk through them. If he wants to and cannot.
Then he's weak.
He's weak.
If he, you know, if in other words, if he really wants to get rid of this stuff called evil, and he cannot, he's a wimp.
Our God's a ninny. Evil is stronger than God. Okay.
Our God's a ninny. Oh, no.
If he can eliminate evil but does not want to, then he is...
He's mean. He's a meanie.
He's just watching us
spiteful.
Fighting around and having a problem.
He's a meanie.
If he neither wants to nor can, then he's both of those. He's weak and mean.
Spiteful and who needs him?
Mm-hmm. And if he wants to and can, which you would think is God, you know, then why do we have evil?
Why hasn't he done it yet?
Why hasn't he gotten rid of evil?
How come we still have this problem of evil?
Mm-hmm.
How come we have these ideas of pain and sorrow and suffering and just downright nastiness?
Now, a quick read makes sense. A quick read would apparently put God into a corner. We're going to talk a little bit about that today.
God
in
the box.
I think we'll get him out of the corner.
He'll get himself out.
Yes.
He'll get himself out of the corner
here. Of course.
No, really, Stan, when we start talking about this, we are dealing with the ideas. People that write on these things are called theodicies. They're trying to either justify God or justify the current status quo of find some sort of rationale.
Explain things.
Explaining, Lucy.
Yeah.
For, you know, that we need to have happen here because all people, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize there is bad stuff in this world, just lots of it.
You know, John, you and I talk often in public venues on this subject, and probably we could agree that the best and quickest, earliest question of the issues of where we came from usually comes in something like, okay, creationists, if you really believe in a loving God, then what's wrong with the world? Why do we have all of this decay? Why are things off kilter? It's ruined. It's a mess here.
And if you're more on the biologically oriented, why do we have disease? What kind of God would allow things like leprosy or tuberculosis ever even come into existence if he's a nice God?
Or even parasites and so forth that caused Darwin so much difficulty when he saw a cat playing with a mouse before he would eat it.
You know, take pleasure in it.
That mean spirit there. So, you know, the problem of evil has been, you know, a huge question since the Greeks and probably earlier.
Well, the Bible does address it. And really, I think we want to address it because it relates to the ultimate story that we believe the Bible is all about.
Mm-hmm.
It explains where we came from, which the Bible described was very good.
Yep.
It says God made it good in the beginning.
And, you know, I think there's a strain in all of us, a hard wiring by God that tends to accept that right away, that it's like the planet is good. We see good in many things. We see beauty in nature. We see a lot of, you know, love.
We can see
exists.
Beauty in relationships.
We see a lot of wonderful things.
An act of kindness.
It's, you know, a quick read of the world, if you were objective, I think would say it looks like it started off well, or there's some really good in here, but something skewed it, or something muddled up the mess here.
Yeah, something went wrong. And so the Bible is the story of what went wrong then. It tells us what went wrong.
It tells us.
Yeah, it's Eve's fault. And then it tells us how to fix it.
we have a lady engineer here. We just got to look at. Sorry, Tommy.
A glare. Glare at Eve's fault.
Sorry.
Know. Actually, God blames not Eve, but Adam.
It falls on man because it says woman was deceived, but man was not.
Nope. So man knew.
So a woman may have been first, but man was more serious. So there's a little blame to share everywhere there. But that's how it came in. That's how it started.
And it started with the idea of people actually being anti-God, in the sense that God is love, which means other-centered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when they turn their thoughts from other-centeredness to self-centeredness, that's when the problem started. And Satan began his whole lie, this being called Satan or Lucifer.
The Bible introduces us to this source of evil.
The source of evil.
Yeah,
he starts off
with Lucifer as a morning star, a beautiful angel in God's great creation. And he kind of got wrapped up with himself, didn't he?
And he goes bad. There's no logical reason why he goes bad, because if there was a logical reason, you could justify evil, but there is no logical reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sit here and we have him deceiving Eve. And saying, you'll be just like God. He turned all the focus from God and Adam and other living to herself.
Yeah, think about yourself, Eve.
Think about yourself.
It.
Yeah,
you
come
on. Self-improvement.
You know? You need a makeover. Here's this makeup kit. Eat this fruit here and you'll have a better mind.
I'm a serpent. I can talk. I can talk because I eat this fruit. Imagine what it'll do for you.
Yeah. Hey.
Where will you go?
He was the first salesman of Wonder Products. The first infomercial on the tree. step right up, folks. Eat this Wonder Product here and you too can
miracle
be like
working,
God.
Miracle working product. Yes.
Yeah, miracle pears.
And not only that, God, he was suggesting that God was trying to withhold that from her.
Yes.
So trying to break that relationship of trust between, you know, creature and creator.
Yeah, he was lying about God.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, and so here's the one equation, though, Stan, that Epicurus missed.
Ah.
And that was, he never includes in the riddle, what if there is this idea of free will?
Free will.
What if God
self-restricts himself?
Restricts himself, puts limitations for the sake of the people he made. He puts limitations on himself in response to this evil in an attempt to save the people because he's not going to force them to be good. You know, if there is this free will, and if there, you know, it says he can, well, God, theoretically, I suppose, if he's all powerful, he could turn us all into robots and we'd all obey. You know, we'd be pre-programmed with no choice.
Absolutely.
But he gives us this thing called choice.
So what you're saying then, John, is the origin of evil has something to do with God allowing there to be freedom of choice, and the responsibility of evil being here is partly because man has chosen wrongly or unhealthfully, and here are some of the results of that bad choice.
That's the nature of love itself. Love, for it to be love, and in relationships, has to allow this freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And the freedom to choose not to love, which God warned against, unfortunately wasn't heeded.
Well, now God's kind of in a bind here then with this kind of problem. Here he has a loving relationship in his view. He loves his creatures. He loves Adam and Eve. He loves the human race.
Mm-hmm.
But they've chosen to exclude him from their lives. And he honors that because he honors freedom of choice. But he sees this planet de-evolving, going worse and worse. The first generation, Adam and Eve's children, start murdering each other. And by the time of the flood, it's so bad that he's forced to just preserve a few that would like him to preserve things, to step in with a flood and save a few.
And the whole point is he has to allow this to play out,
mm-hmm.
to ultimately vindicate destruction of evil, which is a very painful thing for God to do, to destroy creatures he loves. It's like can a woman forget her sucking child, the Bible describes.
Yes.
You know, it's almost impossible
to imagine.
You know, mm-hmm. My mother had a stillborn baby, not stillborn, but it was 8 days old and it died with many complications. And years later, I'd say, do you remember so-and-so? Oh, I think about her every week.
Oh, wow.
You know, 40 years later, 50 years later, you know, God does not want to give up on creatures he's made, but in a sense, he has to, because they're destroying themselves and destroying the creation he made.
Well, and he's honoring their decision, and so God still honors decision even today. So if he's limited in honoring decisions by freedom of choice issues, then whatever he's going to do to eliminate evil, he's got to take that into account, right? He's got to allow for there to be choices.
Yeah, and so we have a torpedo text which explains what Epicurus couldn't explain. Where did evil come from, or why hasn't God fixed it? And we have a parable that Jesus told that sort of gives us some
why
clues.
We have weeds. Our original question, why is it messed up? And Jesus gives this parable, a story about the wheat and tares, and he says the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in the field, but while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares or weeds among the wheat and went his way. When the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares, the weeds, came up also. So the servants of the owner came and said to him, sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? In other words, aren't you producing good things? How come there's evil? How then does it have weeds? And he said, an enemy has done this.
Yes. One unfortunate named Lucifer rebelled and thought that his system, a self-centered view of reality, was better than an other-centered view of reality.
And in Hebrew, the word Satan means enemy or adversary. So Jesus was almost saying, you know, the devil has done this.
The devil has done this.
Has brought evil into a beautiful field.
Later on, Jesus will explain it and label the devil, the adversary, as the origin of evil.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, he says that there is going to be a judgment at the end of the age. There will be a separation of evil from good, and God will, in his mercy, because for love to be love, it can't tolerate evil forever, because evil seeks to destroy what is good.
So God is strong enough and is willing to eliminate evil forever, but he does it in a way in which it will never, ever come up again and still honor freedom of choice.
Yeah.
That's love.
Yeah, that is love. And he desires all people to come to salvation, but love will never force all the people, because then that becomes evil in itself.
Love does not insist on its own way.
Yeah, so we hope that you have discovered a path of love, maybe answers to some ideas of why does God allow suffering. The good news is at the end of the age, God will redeem all the suffering. And that brings us courage as we face a new year and maybe some difficult times.
And no more weeds, I should say, and maybe even no more veggies?
No more veggies.
Oh,
on another
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.